You've heard of Driving While Black and Shopping While Black, and now a new website called Working While Black in Nova Scotia is publishing stories of people's experiences of racism in the workplace. The site is a joint project of UJAMA, Solidarity Halifax, and Quatcha House Cafe. Ben Seashell works with Solidarity Halifax. Falami Jones operates Quatcha House Cafe. Hello, both of you. Welcome to Main Street.
Good afternoon.
Ben, how did the idea for this blog come about? How did it get started?
Well, it was an idea hatched with Carol Ann Wright Parks, who works with UJAMA, and UJAMA is an African Nova Scotian organization. And UJAMA held a series of what they called dialogue lounges about a year and a half ago. And those were places where members of the Black community came together to talk about experiences of racism in the workplace. And after a while, Carol Ann came to talk to me and some other folks that I know with Solidarity Halifax and said, listen, we want to try to get our stories out beyond the Black community so that other people can hear these stories of racism in the workplace as well. And then the plan for the website was formed.
Falami, how did you and Quatcha House Cafe get involved?
That's a good question, too. I think it kind of organically happened. I've always been involved in community-based things, and I think Ben was by the cafe having some injera, and we get talking about the project, and I was like, I want to be a part of that. We started meeting, and then it kind of evolved into Quatcha House partnering, as also I think seeing that the cafe has a place, a role for the community to come out and share their stories.
Yeah. Why did it resonate with you? Why was it something you wanted to be part of?
Well, I've worked and still
while
work
in Nova
while black. Yeah, and all over. And, you know, you hear people come into the cafe just in general or even in social settings where people are telling stories about their experiences. And when I heard that this website was going to sort of capture those stories and it was going to go somewhere, that's what excited me.
Hmm. Yeah. When you first started asking people who came to your cafe whether they had stories about racism in the workplace, what kind of response did you get?
Who doesn't? I mean, even just the other day after speaking with Ben Moore a bit more around trying to get more stories, every time someone comes in, if I just mention what the project's about, they're like, I have a story, mm-hmm. I have a story, you know. So it's not that there's a million. That's not the problem, is the stories, or the amount of stories, I should say.
The problem won't be populating the website
with
them.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Ben, tell me about some of the stories that are already on the website. What's one that stands out for you?
There are several up there. We've got a few that we haven't published yet. We're kind of trickling them out little by little. But there's a story about a woman who's a home care worker who talks about how clients tell her sometimes that they can't touch them with her black skin. There's a story about a woman who is in a board meeting and someone made a comment about if she was too tanned and too dark, people wouldn't want to talk to her. Mm-hmm. They're really stories that, you know, I have sort of learned more and more as in my adult life, especially about racism in the workplace. But even so, whenever you read those stories, you're like, wow, really? They said that? Mm-hmm. Or that happened, really, in 2015?
Yeah. Are there stories that stand out for you, Falami?
I'd say some of the same ones. There's so many, but for sure the boardroom story. So what happened is most of those stories have been submitted from people coming into Quatcha House. So hearing them is one place, but then looking back and reading them sometimes, I'm like, wow. So the lady that goes in to the boardroom and the coordinator or director of the board actually made that comment and then later said, you know, I'm really sorry, and I'm actually a diversity trainer. You know, and she was sincere in her apology, but I think was also taken back by her actions to say it's true. It still exists, and it's going to take a little while to still unlearn, mm-hmm. right? And you always think of it as somebody else's problem, or that's that. You know, racism is not. I'm not racist, but I thought that was profound. So that one sticks out for me.
In the way that one sticks out for you, is it about whether you're racist as a person or whether you might do or say racist things?
I think it's our lived reality of just existing and seeing how privilege operates, white privilege. In that story, one of the other participants in the boardroom was appalled by the comment. And later after says to the lady that submitted it who was black, you know, geez, can you imagine that was said? And the person who reported the story says, well, why didn't you say anything? And the other woman also took a step back and said, you know, I don't know why I didn't say anything. I should have said something. So I think it's kind of layered in looking at whose responsibility it is to sort of fight back with racism, but also how we contribute and continue to reinforce behaviors.
Ben, you're a white dude. How surprised were you to hear some of these stories?
Unfortunately, not that surprised. I think I've if you'd asked me 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I think I would have been more surprised. But more recently, I've learned how white folks have the privilege to be able to be oblivious of racism most of the time and not to think about it if we don't want to. But in befriending more people of color and in studying and reading more about these stories, it's become something that I realize is much more common.
Falami, if old-fashioned racism was more overt, segregated schools or water fountains, for instance, mm-hmm. how would you describe the kind of racism that people deal with now in 2015?
That's a good question. I was thinking about that a bit more. Sometimes it could be very salient. It hides. Many times in the community talk about it as a glass ceiling that you hit. You try and get higher and higher, at least in employment, and you don't get any further. But I also would argue that the stories show that it is still overt. And there was one where one of the women that was a healthcare worker got presented with a magazine of the Book of Negroes and the picture of the slave on the front of it. And the lady that she was caring for insisted that that was her. And today I saw her again and she's like, I've got another story. And she's like, she's from Jamaica. And she's like, I can't tell you how many times my clients say to me, wow, your English is so good. It's so good. And she said, I'm going to say something back. And I love this resilience because she hasn't said anything. And she says, I'm going to say, well, yeah, maybe because I've been speaking English since I've been born, but just the fact that they assume that, she has poor English or she doesn't have education and how great her English is. So, we might think of it as something that's hidden, but it actually sometimes is very overt. Hmm. Yeah.
Some people hearing that might not think that that's racism.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Or how would you explain that it is?
That's a good question. One of the things that I think is profound when we think of certain forms of oppression is people are experts in their own body and their own experience. So I say if somebody's lived with racism their whole life, then they can name it because they're good at it. Yeah.
Is there any onus on the operators of the blog to get the other side of the story? An employer may have a very different perspective on some of the situations described, perhaps?
Well, we're not naming any employers on the blog. The idea is that it's anonymous. And our point of view is that employers and the so-called other side already has lots and lots of places where it can get its side of the story out. Mm-hmm. This website exists to put out sides of the story that most of us in Nova Scotia don't really hear about. So no.
To what degree does the other side of the story matter in the context of these personal accounts?
I think it matters in terms. I think it comes out anyway because the story isn't one-sided. It's told with every ingredient a part of it, mm-hmm. and I think that the great thing with a website like this is it's a teaching tool. Like the more we meet. As a group, the more we're energized by the possibilities that can come out of it, the analysis that we hope to have later. So, and that's with all communities, with white communities, black communities. I was speaking with a Muslim brother the other day around organizing and just thinking of ways in which we can use media, social media, or websites like that to sort of highlight or underscore experiences of oppression, but also, continue to build on.
Also, related to what Falami was saying earlier about people being experts in their own experience, mm-hmm. I think one thing that's important when we talk about the other side is that often with racism, it's the effect that matters, not necessarily the intent. Mm-hmm. You hear people say things like, I didn't mean it that way. Well, I'm not racist, or I didn't try to say something racist, but it's not so much about what you try. I think we need to realize sometimes that it's the effect of our actions. And a great analogy for that is like if you step on someone's foot, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter whether you meant to do it or not. You get off their foot if you're hurting them.
And it's learned too, Ben. Sorry to cut in, but I was just thinking of that other scenario we were talking about at the party the other day with a young girl who heard, one of her parents say, thank the black lady for helping out. And she turned around, it was only about a two-year-old, and turned around and looked up and said, thank you, and left. So I think that it's also about looking at the behaviors that we do and how it's, we're passing that down.
Huh. So that should perhaps have just been thank the lady
for
helping out. What's the ultimate goal of this website?
I'd say for now the goal is to get stories out there. It's it's an awareness tool. It's to get people thinking who are not aware of the fact that anti-black racism continues in Nova Scotia in 2015 in the workplace. We've thought of some other ideas from there, whether or not, we have a section on the website where if people do want to take action beyond just submitting their story anonymously on a website, who they can call. So the Nova Scotia Human Rights Commission, for example, or someone in the labor movement who knows about workplace racism issues. Falami?
Yeah, I think that's a big piece. Having a place to submit, it exists, a place where your story can be told. And we also want to highlight resilience, too. Like, there are some stories that we're hoping to show how people fought back and ways in which, you can even unpack your knapsack, as Peggy McIntosh would say.
Your privilege.
Your
knapsack.
Privilege, yes. So I think it has many, many, many reasons and resources that can come from it.
What about resources for people who may not experience racism in the workplace but might be bystanders to it?
There's some resources on the website. If you check our page, which is workingwhileblackns.com, there's a tab that says resources there. And some of those are for people who are experiencing racism, and some are just general educational tools. The one that was mentioned a minute ago, which is always a good place to start, I find, is Unpacking the Privilege and Knapsack by Peggy McIntosh. There's a great book that came out in Nova Scotia. I think it's almost 15 or 20 years ago now, but it was called Racism, Whose Problem? And it was put out by a group called the Metro Coalition for a Non-Racist Society, which actually should be available in all libraries, I believe, and school libraries as well. So those are definitely good places to start.
Thanks, both of you, for speaking with us about this.
Thank you.